You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we've been laughing at impotent college grandstanding for over 20 years. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, the hopeful bromantic, and I retroactively and proactively denounce anything anyone has ever said and ever will say on this show. I have a question from a midsider to answer here in a moment, but first, to help me answer the question and run this entire show, I'm going to bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip from his corner office, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Another stunning week of farce. It's been an exciting week. New changes here in the corner office. We moved our storage location, so a bunch of things that were in the office went to the new storage location. A bunch of things that we didn't have room for now are now here in the office. So it's looking pretty professional around here all of a sudden. So it's nice. I like it. The corner office is getting an upgrade.
Well, so all that farce is, you know, all that farce is fueling you, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's fueling me.
Yeah. I do appreciate that the farce this week is much less woke farce, right? We've been talking about being past peak woke. I think this is an example of what farce might look like past peak woke. I mean, we do have the one story, which is arguably maybe a little going back into peak woke, but also, arguably, it's what always existed. So, I don't know. I think, what do you think?
I saw something go semi-viral on Twitter. Someone posting the book cover of Ominous Parallels, a non-objectivist.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, we're returning back to the 2000s, right? We're getting out of the peak woke, and we're moving on to witnessing other farces. So
that's good. That's good. Yeah. So before we get into that farce, let's go to our listener question, our midsider question. No Bro Edjo asked me in the Discord. He said, as a fellow non-drinker, do people try to set you up as friends with other non-drinkers? Like, oh, you don't drink, so you have so much in common. I don't think the answer I'm going to give is the answer he was expecting when asking this question. I think he's expecting a yes. And I understand why, because people do this kind of thing all the time. I mean, William, you talked about in response in Discord, you talked about people just assume because people are gay, they'll have things in common, right?
Yeah. 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 It's funny because, I put my tag in Discord, everyone knows is 0% queer or something like that. I can't even remember right now. But
100% queer free with an exclamation point.
There you go. There you go. 100% queer free. There we go. It's actually really hard for me to meet other men who are men and gay, especially for dating. So I don't mind people introducing me to other gay friends. Like, that's great. You know, it's great networking. But yes, there's an underlying assumption there. It's like, oh, these two gay people, they should have a lot in common. And it's like pretty damn rare. At least for me on my side, right? But I appreciate it at the same time, right? Like, I appreciate the sentiment and I appreciate the chance to network, because Justin, in my real life, I don't meet a lot of gay people. So I guess I would kind of turn the question to you. In your real life, do you meet a lot of straight edge people just randomly?
No, right? I don't mean anyone straight edge. I mean, In two ways, right? Straight edge is in itself a offshoot of the punk movement. So that's more of sort of a Northeastern California thing. When I say Northeastern, I mean like New England, New York,
right,
that area. And also California. It's more of where the major sort of punk scenes were. Also, obviously, Chicago as well. That was, you know, a major hub of rock and roll and punk and those things. Straight edge is specific, no, but also people who don't drink, no, especially people who don't drink who are religious, right? But I think that kind of speaks to what you were talking about and even what the midside means is the midside is this idea of belonging but not belonging, where
I would say belonging without identity, capital I identity, right?
Yeah, and that's another good way of saying it, because it's the idea that one value or one interest does not define your character and identity completely. Whereas nowadays people assume that, especially when one of your interests or values is something that is atypical, like drinking, or, you know, a low percentage of the population is gay, right?
Yeah. I think I think that in some ways, because of the way we are as midsiders, we are used to moving between these sort of cliques, right?
Yes.
And so, yeah, to say, you know, to say, oh, I'm straight edge or I'm gay, you know, and I'm also part of the tribe, I would not say both of those, right? Like, it's not that I'm also right. part of the tribe. That's why I'm 100% queer free.
Right. And that ultimately, Edjo, goes to the answer to your question. And what I mean by that is, like, William, if people were to suggest it, I would appreciate the benevolence in it, as in they're saying, hey, here's a value that's important to you. Here's somebody else who shares that value. However, I think the thing people know about me is I'm multifaceted, as William's saying, and I honestly don't get a lot of suggestions in that way. It might have helped me when I was single, if people were like, hey, here's a woman who has values the same as you. But people have never really made those suggestions to me or offered me help. I mean, even my parents. I mean, yeah. My mom even said at one point in my life, things just seem to work out for you. Right. So even my parents are just kind of like, he knows what he wants. He knows what his values are. Things are going to be fine for him.
I think you're dancing around an interesting point too, is that folks use behavior as a substitute sometimes for values. So in other words, the yeah. fact that you're straight edge, that you don't drink, is a value, right? And it connects to a lot of things that, you know, we've talked about before. But just straight up the fact that they don't drink, right? They, like you said, they could be just religious, right? So they're against right. pleasure, right? So that's not really the value you have.
Right. This is levels of abstraction, William. So simply not consuming alcohol is a very concrete action.
But because simply we're sucking human dick beings, is a very concrete action.
Completely. Completely. But because we're human beings, those are concretes that are a result of abstract principles and values that guide us. And people don't right. always look down the line to know what those abstract principles are, which is something that would really connect you with someone.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Which is why, you know, I've always said that the worst place for me to look for a husband would be San Francisco. Right. Even yeah. though the density of gay men is super high there, the concentration leads to homogenization. And
well, right. And I mean, in some ways, too, Southern California, not to compare like interests with sexuality. However, and now I've just contradicted myself, but whatever. Call me oppressive if you want. One of the things I loved when I first moved out to LA was like, wow, everyone has similar interests to me. I can just make casual references to movies yeah, and TV yeah. shows and music out here, and people get what I'm talking about. But again, that's a very concrete surface level similarity. As I got to know everyone, I realized, wow, their values are nowhere close to the same as mine.
Yep. Yeah. So I think it's a, I think it does uncover this, like you said, this dealing on a different level of abstraction. And I think it's better to live on this little bit higher level of abstraction, right?
Don't mean higher as in morally superior, though we might make that argument. When he says higher, what we mean is it's just more abstract.
More complex, yeah. More abstract, right. yeah. And right. so, yeah, and you know what? I think it's natural. Like, it's not something to rebel against or something. It's natural because you start with those behaviors that then you yes. start to investigate in a person, because not everyone's thought about those, and most people haven't thought about them explicitly, right? So you have yeah. to start with those behaviors. And so, yeah, I think it's, like you said, I take it as a benevolent thing when people point that stuff out.
Yeah. It really, what you're talking about, William, is that's part of the maturation process, and that's part of the growing up process, is when you become a teenager and you start developing higher reasoning and the ability to think more abstractly is when you start investigating the concretes and connecting them to abstracts. And if you want to know a lot of what leads to wokeness and a lot of what leads to the farce we witness a lot, it's the stunting of that process or refusing
the arrested
to...
Arrested development. We'll have that in one of the trailers.
In one of the trailers. Also, I think a couple of the stories here, right? Like, I think the first couple of farces here that we're witnessing are directly related to that. Farsi? I think Midsider co-host emeritus Daniel's wife might have a problem with what
That's
we just
right.
said. But
yeah. What's the plural of right. farce?
I don't know. I think it's just farce. It's like fish, right?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Let's find out in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. So, William, by you saying let's see what the plural of farce is, it's created this obligation. I feel this moral obligation now on this side of the break, on this side of the bumper, to say what the plural is, and I have no idea. So this is what I'm going to say. If you would like to learn what the plural of farce is, give us money. I mean, you could just read the dictionary, or you could give us money. I know which one I prefer. You can go to Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. And go there, and you can subscribe to us, support us. We'd appreciate that. You can also go to Fountain. And apparently, I just learned this pre-show, you can do a thing by giving us sats. Is that correct, William?
That's
sats?
Right.
S-A-T-S?
Right. Yep. Satoshis.
Satoshis?
Yep. It's just what? A denomination of Bitcoin. So for folks who listen on sat, thank you for your support. We've already received 90 cents on the last episode. So
90 cents?
I know.
A lot of people might be only 90 cents. But to me, that's a big deal. That's... William just put us on there, and people decided who don't know us.
Random strangers. Yeah.
Random strangers are like, you know what? You're worth 90 cents. And you know what? A lot of you aren't worth 90 cents from random strangers. Yeah, that's right. I just insulted my own audience. So thank you. And if you want to go there and give us sats or satoshis, or I don't even understand what the hell I'm saying right now.
Well,
of course, William.
Eventually.
I'm already orange pilled. I went to Clemson. How dare you? That's not what that means.
No.
Oh. Well, something else that doesn't make sense, William, is the first bit of farce. I saw something absurd and I saw Tom Brady, so I had to talk about it. But then I read this article from the USA Today. I don't understand any of this. So apparently a bunch of people paid to go to an event where Tom Brady would be there. And he autographs stuff for them, and they're complaining about it. And there's all these details about the name of the group, what was signed, how much money they paid, where it is. And I just don't understand all of these details, because there's one basic premise I don't understand here, William. And maybe you can explain it to me. So Tom Brady signed all of this stuff. Footballs, helmets, old season tickets that were never used, things like that. And people are saying his signature decreased the value of that memorabilia. In fact, the USA Today uses the word ruined the memorabilia. And the reason they're saying that is his penmanship is too sloppy. I don't understand this.
It's his signature, right?
That's what I don't understand.
So he's supposed to create a different signature to increase the value for them?
That's what I don't get. Like, are we now so entitled as a society that we're judging the aesthetics of celebrities' signatures?
His signature was not beautiful enough for them. Is that really what it is? Because, Justin, I could understand if they were like, oh, this is just something that shouldn't have been signed by him. Like, maybe he was signing, I don't know. I can't even think of what it would be. The
a
Mona Lisa.
Of Giselle?
The Mona Lisa. You know?
Well, that's a lot prettier than a picture of Giselle. Yeah, I said he looks like a horse, and I could say that now. Isn't it great? He's not married to her anymore. Giselle looks like a horse. Yeah.
Well, but you understand what I'm saying, right? Like, I could understand if it's signing something, like, out of context. It'd be like, well, that actually kind of decreases the value. It doesn't make it more rare. But, yeah.
About his penmanship? Maybe the Mona Lisa. But give me something else that Tom Brady could sign. Actually, give me something football-related that Tom Brady could sign. Tom Brady could sign that would decrease the value.
I don't... It would have to be something like, you know... championship football from the 60s or something, right?
I disagree. The greatest winner of all time in football signed that. I think that would increase its value.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. You're saying increases
I was trying
value.
To bait you.
They're obviously
I was
among
to bait
these
you.
Collectors. Obviously, well, these collectors saw the value go down, but I think that that is a really short term thinking, right? Like these. Maybe for these collectors in this market, but I don't know I think your argument wins out on the long run, right?
Well, yeah, that's the number one thing I don't get. Like, and I think really what it is what you're saying is these are resellers, right?
Yeah,
they're resellers, and they're worried that people aren't going to believe
speculate.
It's Tom Brady.
You know, this isn't a commodity we can speculate on now. He's fragmented right. the market further.
But let me ask you something. We know Tom Brady is a smart man. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so.
If you were a celebrity, wouldn't you be taking steps to combat resellers?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he's doing this consciously.
Well, that's my argument.
So it doesn't affect resellers, but the people who actually just want his signature.
Right, because there's a difference between making a deal with someone and say, okay, I'm going to sign this many autographs so you can sell them. And people coming up to you in an event and you signing autographs for them. Because we've seen this with like WWE superstars where people will go to the airport to meet them and get them to sign a bunch of stuff. And then they just resell it because they're not going there and getting them to sign 100 photos to keep for themselves. They're going to sell those 100 photos on eBay. So I've heard of celebrities only signing one item per person or making them out to specific people, like to David. So that way it can't be resold. Because when you're a celebrity, do you really want people tracking your flights and coming to events like this just to get stuff to resell it?
Probably not. I have enough quote-unquote fun at the airport anyway. I just want to get out of there.
Right. And you don't want those people around you in life because those aren't, you know, honest people. Right? Again, this is what we were just talking about with the sort of arrested development surface level thing. They're not looking at all of these human beings as human beings. They're simply seeing them as, oh, look at this concrete thing they can provide for me. And I would argue that's even sort of the flipper reseller mentality. It's seeing every economic transaction as purely concrete, right? Oh, well, if I buy this, it's the simple purchase of it and possession of it that makes it valuable. They're not seeing that there's more that goes into the value of things than simple material goods. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like having Tom Brady's autograph is valuable because it's Tom Brady and you met him. Like I've never really been the kind of person to buy an autograph from someone I've never met. I don't even like autographs. I'd rather just get a picture with someone famous that I met.
Yeah, than an autograph. Yeah, that makes sense.
Maybe autographs are from a time before smartphones.
Yeah, proving that you saw the person.
Yeah. But when we're talking about a time with smartphones and all this new technology, we have to start talking about AI and how it affects things. Now, I think we've talked about AI on the show before, William. Have we not? I don't remember. Remind me.
Yeah, quite a few times.
Okay. And sort of how like AI isn't really different than it was, at least from my perception. It's just that people decided to start marketing it. And you know, AI can't make decisions.
It's become a bit easier to use as a layman. I think that's the other thing.
Why has it become easier to use as a layman? Is that something you can explain?
Yeah, I think because there's more public interfaces to actually using it.
Okay.
Right? Like you can sign up for a ChatGPT account and you can start making pictures, right?
Right. So people just created platforms or interfaces which made it easier for people. Now they made it easier to make a paper on it. Okay, well, here's an example. Okay. There was I think this is in a California school, right? Pikesville High School. Can you look up where Pikesville High School is?
No. This is Baltimore, baby.
Baltimore. Oh, of course it's Baltimore.
Yeah.
Of course it's Baltimore. So at a Baltimore high school, there was an AI. I knew that. There was an AI recording going around of a principal that nearly got the principal fired. I'm going to read a few paragraphs from this news article that explain everything. The former athletic director at Pikesville High School has been arrested in connection to an AI-generated impersonation of the school's principal. The athletic director faces multiple charges, including stalking, theft, disruption of school operations, and retaliation against a witness. Police said the charges are connected to an investigation that started on January 17th into a voice recording circulated on social media that was alleged to have been the voice of the school's principal. Police said the audio clip was an alleged race-based commentary on the school's students and teachers, which was spread on social media. That led to the temporary removal of the principal from the school, as well as many hate-filled messages on social media and numerous calls to the school. From the day the audio clip went out, the principal told detectives he had an idea of who was behind it. The charging documents state that the principal believed the athletic director was responsible for the clip because he believed the athletic director was tech-savvy and familiar with AI. And a grievance was fueled by the athletic director's contract not being renewed due to work performance issues that included terminating a coach without approval and allegedly paying teachers under the table for helping him with his job, which is the subject of an internal audit. William, this is the same thing we were talking about with only looking at things on a concrete level. If you can concretely replicate the voice of the principal, you believe you can convince people the principal said something that wasn't connected and isn't connected with his character.
Yeah.
Isn't that the problem with AI? Is that it's so concrete based, and people who are more concrete based thinkers are buying into the trap of it? Isn't this story an example of that?
I think that's probably partially true. I think the other thing is that people have been, we aren't just concrete creatures, right? We also are story-driven creatures, right? We're narrative-driven.
Yes.
So this also fits a narrative, right? It activates a narrative that's very common in Baltimore, right? So a very race-based narrative. And, it's something that is really worrying, right? We're not teaching, you know, we have abandoned teaching conceptually, and we're teaching narrative. And so there's no moral reasoning. There's just, does this fit? How do I mash the sequence of events into a narrative that is the preferred narrative of the day? And so the preferred narrative of the day is, oppressive white principal oppresses black morally upstanding teacher / athletic director or whatever he was.
Yeah, that makes sense that's what's going on here. I mean, that's kind of scary, isn't it? That people can start. Let's look at it that way. Let's ask it that way. Do we actually have to be afraid of this now, of people fabricating evidence for this? Because to me, one of the most farcical things and most hilarious things about this story was that they had to get law enforcement and the FBI involved to prove that it was fake. Now, yes, the FBI or the law enforcement is always going to have to prove its case. But did this really have to go all the way to the FBI to prove that this was AI replicated? Couldn't people have just listened to it?
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think the issue is, you know, the police are not incredibly tech savvy. And I would imagine the FBI is slightly more tech savvy and have had to deal with this AI issue before. So reaching out for the cops, the local cops to reach out to the FBI, especially the Baltimore City cops, which I'm assuming, well, Pikesville, it could be Baltimore County. The Baltimore County cops reaching out to the FBI to get help, like technical help. I don't know if that you can read much into that other than, yeah, that's what they do. I mean, they do the same thing with fingerprints, right?
So basically what you're saying is local law enforcement is so incompetent, they always have to help ask daddy government for help.
No, I mean it more in the there's too many specialties and the FBI can specialize. Like in a rational government, I can still see a role for the FBI of being a technical clearinghouse, not a law enforcement arm. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like
no.
There's an aspect of like, hey, let's gather all our techniques together in a central way that that can be verified and really defended in court, because otherwise you'd have to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of different police localities trying to develop relationships with experts and evidence collection and blah blah blah. Especially on the tech side, I can see that being really, really hard. You know, media forensics in general is really hard, which is kind of the specialty that this would fall under. And like you were saying, for a layman, it's easy. There are AI detectors that you can put voices through or pictures through or even text papers through. And you can tell.
Yeah, I do that.
Give you a score about how much of it is AI.
What percent is it? Or what? It's a probability. It'll say, like, this is 85% likely to have been AI generated.
Yep. And so, and you can start to spot some of that on your own, too. But if you're going to, like you said,
like
if you're going to put it in a courtroom, right? If you're trying to prove a case,
right,
that's a different standard.
Right. So, one, that's what I was saying, is if you knew the principal, I feel like you could listen to it and be like, he wouldn't say
this.
Oh,
yeah. Personally, you should be able to do that. Right.
Right. And know the tone of voice.
As far as being scared, as far as being scared, well, let me get to the tone of voice thing, because that's one thing I've been railing about recently. I don't remember if I've said it on the show or not, but the whole pitch correction in music, like it makes it unlistenable. Any modern songs, it just really makes it unlistenable if you really... once you hear it, you can't unhear it. That every singer is hitting the note perfectly, right? And so that's done with algorithms. That's done with AI, is the layman's way to think about it. And yeah, it's the same with the voice. The human voice, when you listen to an AI-generated voice, it sounds realistic and it can emote and things, but it's like it emotes exactly the same way, right? The tones are exact, right? Like it's just not – the human voice doesn't do that.
You're removing individualism when you're doing that.
Yeah, yeah. And you're removing a property of the human voice, which is that it's organic. Yeah. But as far as being scared of something like this, I'm of two minds of this. Here's my more pessimistic mind. People already just make shit up anyway.
Right.
Isn't this just another version of just making shit up?
100%.
Right? So, like... Yeah, like, I don't know that this is going to...
100%.
I don't know if this is going to really... It's just another tool by the narcissist to make shit up about you, right?
Right.
So I think narcissists are going to go crazy with this, yes.
Right.
But, like, I mean, talking behind your back, now it's just going to be, oh, listen to this clip behind your back. So I think for us non-narcissists, us people, like you said... We need to think in terms of evidence and just remember, oh, these kinds of things can be faked. Like, we already had doctored photos before. And we had some doctored voice stuff before. It's just going to get more common. I think now that it's easier, more narcissists are going to use it. So that's the first mind I have.
Yeah. And basically that's the real farce here, is this dude wasted the FBI's time. By participating, like, maybe be a better athletic director and worry less about creating AI generate. It's like the lowest effort in order to try and keep your job, right? Oh, I'm going to do AI in order to get this guy framed as a racist rather than, I don't know, like, not fire a coach for.
Oh, you're going to fire me? I'll get you fired. That's really what this was, Justin.
Yes.
Right?
Just a waste of time. All right. But when we're talking about getting daddy government involved, there is some major growth of government farce this week that I have to talk about, okay? So this is from the Transportation Department, U.S. Department of Transportation. It says, Biden-Harris administration announces final rule requiring automatic refunds of airline tickets and ancillary service fees. The Biden-Harris administration today announced that the U.S. Department of Transportation has issued a final rule that requires airlines to promptly provide passengers with automatic cash refunds when owed. The new rule makes it easy for passengers to obtain refunds when airlines cancel or significantly change their flights, significantly delay their checked bags, or fail to provide the extra services they purchased. Some of those things are what people are entitled to a refund for: canceled or significantly changed flights, significantly delayed baggage return, extra services not provided, such as if you pay for a Wi-Fi and it doesn't work, I guess. I don't know. It just says if you pay for Wi-Fi and airline fails to provide this service. I mean, I've been on a flight where I paid for Wi-Fi and it didn't work the whole time. So I was wondering then if I would get the service or get my feedback. So the final rule improves the passenger experience by requiring refunds to be automatic, so you don't have to ask for them. They have to be given to you. But that just seems like government's going to have oversight over it all the time, because who...
How are they going to know?
Right. That's what I mean. I was going to give the example of Wi-Fi. Right? So if I pay for Wi-Fi and it's not working, how are they going to know that? And how is government going to ensure that I get my automatic refund for that? That seems something that's nearly impossible to prove unless there's government oversight. There's somebody sitting there looking at every airline to make sure the Wi-Fi is working, every flight to make sure the Wi-Fi is working properly.
Yeah.
Also, refunds have to be prompt. That means within 7 business days. The refund has to be in cash or original form of payment, and it has to be in the full amount. So there's two questions I hear here right now, William. One you already started thinking about was the logistical side of it, and the other is the moral side of it. They're related, though. And what I mean by that is, are these rules or laws that should exist? Is the question, right, about all these refunds and everything. And the other question is, the Department of Transportation could just pass rules, because to me, this just seems like government taking control of an industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, since deregulation, some things got less regulated around the airlines, right? But including fair stuff. But yeah, I think this is just kind of walking that back slowly. I mean, why shouldn't the government just decide on the fare in general and all of the costs of these things, right? It's the same. There's the same moral argument here. I think this gets back to what we've talked about in the medical industry, right? That right now there are like 4 parties involved. And anytime I talk to my doctor, it's me, my doctor, the insurance provider, and Medicare. Even though I'm not a Medicare patient, right? These are the 4 people that all get to decide my health, and mostly it's the government that gets to decide. Right. I think it's the same thing here with the airlines. You have multiple people involved in this transaction, which should be between you and the airline. And you have the FAA, you have the whatever U.S. Transportation Department, random other bureaucrats all involved in this transaction. I think the right role for government here would be to ensure that there's no deception, right? Like if they make it really impossible to get your refund, that should be, and that's not stated clear up front, then you could say, oh, this is fraudulent or deceptive, right? That part I could understand if this was focused on that. I think also there's a role for the government to outline a standard. In other words, like, hey, here's a standard in terms of, mostly in the terms of if you have to sue to recover if they don't meet the standard. Like, hey, if someone says this as the standard, this is what this means. I can see some role for that as well. I would mostly want some outside entity to define those. But again, in the context of ensuring speedy resolution in lawsuits, I could understand that as well. But yeah, as far as like setting these rules, this is the same thing. I mean, we had another step here too with the whole TikTok thing, Justin, which I know didn't make our rounds, but the TikTok ban falls under this, right? as much as...
Was TikTok actually banned? I didn't want to bring it up on the show because I just don't want to be the stereotypical old guy. I hate it. It's the most stereotypical old guy thing about me. Like, I hate TikTok, dude. Like, it's just... I see it as useless. So, it's ironic. I'm kind of okay with it being banned.
Yeah, they're going to force the sale. And then TikTok has said, well, they'll just shut down in America. So
we're going to not have TikTok in America?
I think that they're going to sue and probably win because I don't think the Constitution has a China exception.
Well, right. Morally, you can't tell a business how to run itself, right?
Like, yeah.
And that's the thing.
Flies in the face of equal protection and several other clauses about contractual protection, right?
Well, right.
TikTok has a contract with people, including U.S. citizens. And so you can't just stick your government finger in the middle of it. But that goes back to this. That's what they're doing here, right?
Right.
There's a contract you have with the airline when you buy a ticket and they're just sticking their finger in that contract and saying, we changed our mind. This is how the contract should... These are the clauses that should be in that contract.
What about the situation such as this, where you don't get an opportunity to negotiate an individual contract with the airport? And what I mean by that is the airlines are so big that they have their standard operating procedures that they basically can say, take it or leave it with a generic contract to any passenger.
Then
is that fair?
Yeah. Then you ride the train or the bus or drive yourself. Yeah, I think it's fine. Or you take a different... there's other airlines that cater more individual to your more individual needs. What is that? The JetSuite X? Everybody loves JetSuite X. Nobody's complaining about hidden fees on there. But Justin, we have to contrast this story with the other story. The Biden administration has decided not to ban menthol cigarettes until after the election.
Is that their way of bribing people to vote for them? Like, why till after the election?
They think it will affect his minority voting. Because remember, they're only doing this because black men smoke menthol cigarettes. Like, literally, they've stated this is the reason. No. They don't want to lose more votes to Trump, I guess.
Yeah. I mean...
But I think you're right. I think this is a lose-lose. That, at least on that issue, it's a lose-lose, right? Because you're either saying, vote for me so I can ban menthol cigarettes, or you give Trump the ability to say, vote for me, and we'll unban menthol cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, and that's my thing about here. Like, a lot of this is probably good, the idea that, hey, you should be paid back if certain things happen. But the idea that government is setting that, it's what you were saying, is now there's not as much of a variety that the different airlines can offer.
Yeah.
You may prefer one airline's compensation over another, but now they all have to offer the same compensation.
Yeah. And it also takes out the, like, I think you're going to get a lot less comps for things too, right? Like, why bother providing? Every service now is going to be reviewed by the airline that they charge for. And say, do we even need to provide this service anymore if it carries this legal risk? So that's something to think about too.
Yep. Especially because apparently now you don't need to pass laws. You can just, as the U.S. Department of Transportation, enact the powers of Congress and pass rules. And that's how laws are made nowadays. So much for elected officials.
Regulatory state. Yep.
Now the bureaucrats who are put in place by the elected officials get to set the rules of the country. I mean, that's not even a conspiracy theory, William. That is the deep state right there, because then those people who are put into place hire staffers to work for them, and that's the deep state right there. You don't even have to talk about conspiracies and what they believe or anything. This story is the deep state making rules, is it not? Making laws.
Yep. Yes, it is.
100%.
Okay, but when we're talking about people who want to control and people who are setting rules, the big, big story this week, these past 2 weeks, although I saw more of it this week, is what is going on college campuses. And I don't know, William, I find this interesting and both uninteresting. And I find this interesting because of what we talked about before, where we had the article. I don't know if we ever actually covered it, right? I forget the site it was from, but it was the idea of why do people in the LGBTQ plus whatever acronym you want to use support Palestine and Gaza and Hamas,
yeah,
when obviously, yeah, we know their, you know, the Muslim view on LGBTQ plus whatever. So it makes no sense. So I find it interesting from that standpoint that, you know, we've said this forever. Why is it that the leftist, quote unquote, progressives support a side that is much less
so religious? Yeah, so religious, yeah. So right wing, so
right.
You know, so all of these things, right?
Yeah, right. But then on the other hand, I don't find this interesting.
Like, talk about a history of actually working with the Nazis, the real life Nazis, not the ones they make up, right?
Yes.
But they're somehow aligned with them.
Yes. But what I don't really find as interesting is, like, people in college have decided to protest in the laziest way possible. And is this not
by
just
camping?
Right. By camping on campus, right? Oh, no, we're not going to leave campus unless you stop doing what we want, right? And is this not just a continuation of the Chaz technique we saw back
or Occupy Wall
times?
Street? Yeah, or
yeah.
Occupy
well, Occupy Wall
Street.
Wall Street is where it started. Well, it's they think it started with like sit-ins in the civil rights movement, and they think they're carrying on that sort of. I mean, even in this Financial Times article I had, where you get into it and they're comparing it to the '60s. Right, where does it say this? Let me see if I can scroll down here and find it by. I lost it, but they said in here, like, oh, this is a continuation of, like, the way things were in the 60s on college campuses. Oh, here it is. Yeah. The week-old Gaza Solidarity Encampment has had an eventful life, reconnecting a new generation of Columbia student activists to predecessors who made the university a center of protest against the Vietnam War when they occupied buildings in 1968. So they're trying to connect it to that. But the difference in that, William, is like those were people across the country trying to change the way the entire country was. Here, they're complaining about their specific organization and saying where their money is going. Right. And they're saying, oh, you're investing in this, you're investing in that. Like, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I are we really comparing this to Kent State? That's what I keep coming back to. Maybe it's because I grew up in the Midwest, but is this really a Kent State style thing? Or are they applauding and they can't wait for the first deaths to come from these campus protests? Are they really cheering that on? They really want to turn back the clock? I mean, I know that was 1970 and you said '60s, but
so I said
is that
60,
really
but,
what they're aiming for?
I don't think they're aiming for it as much as they think they're still in that. And I don't know if they're cheering for that sort of death.
I disagree. They are aiming for it. They want this death, right? They want deaths.
What I was saying is, hold on. I don't know if they want it or they just assume it's going to happen. Because, see, we're just framing it
to them.
It
it's a means to an end.
Right.
To them, it's a means to an end. They want the
there.
Public to turn and turn against Israel, right?
Yes.
And you know, against capitalism, against all these things, right? They'll say.
Well, right, and that's what I was gonna say. I don't even think it's against Israel. I just
no.
This is look. The reason they're for Gaza and for Hamas and Palestine is. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And they think because those groups are against Western culture and against capitalism and against Christianity, that they're on their side so they can support them in order to attack what they're trying to attack. And that's what I'm saying, that you and I are framing it differently.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
they just assume something's going to happen and they're being the aggressors before they see the capitalist society as being the aggressors. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I can't imagine. It's funny to see there's been a lot of man on the street sort of interviews of people protesting. They don't know what infittata means. You know, the one from right after when they were someone who was chanting from the river to the sea. They asked what river and what sea. They didn't know. There's just the, you know, people have made connections on Twitter, some most very hyperbolic, to the brown shirts in Germany. And but there is a kernel of truth here. There are a bunch of just unthinking people in these elite institutions, Justin. And I think that unlike the Kent State time in America, I think that most of the public looks at these campuses and they don't think these are the future leaders of America, right? They look and they say, what retards, right? They just don't trust these institutions, right? It's the reverse of, now there was a lot of hippie hate back in the day, right? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they don't see that that there's anything thoughtful coming out of these things. And I think that when we talk about the post-woke era, that's the capital that they're burning in the name of Palestine and overthrowing capitalism right now, that I think is leading to less cultural or the opposite cultural impact as they are hoping for by doing these things. I don't think anyone looks at a campus overrun with campers and don't immediately connect it to the Summer of Love and to the Chaz and to Occupy Wall Street and know exactly where this is headed. There's going to be rapes. There's going to be theft. There's going to be a murder in these camps if they don't clear them out. Some of them have been cleared out. And that's just where this leads, right? This is a morally bankrupt thing. And this is not to say, you know, there are rational positions against what Israel's doing in Palestine. There are rational ways to protest those things. So I'm not saying that you have to support Israel to, you know, the alternative is not to support Israel necessarily, right? But these kinds of protests, quote unquote, which are just, you know, standing in the middle of the road. We haven't really talked about that one, but, you know, the taking over buildings that are camping on the lawn, preventing Jewish students and faculty from entering the room. Was it Columbia or a different university that started basically reenacting COVID rules, saying, oh, all classes are virtual now because we can't keep you safe, quote unquote safe? Justin, we had in our bingo card, we had the climate craziness as the cause of the next lockdown. But look, it's actually Palestine. Palestine is the cause of the next lockdown, at least for people on these campuses.
Well, I would say protesting is the cause of the next lockdown. It's the Antifa lockdown is what it is protecting you from that. But that's really the thing here, William. That's really the farce here. I think you finally hit on what is ridiculous here. And it's not being against supporting Israel. It's not being on a specific side of this issue or not. It's LARPing war. And what I mean by that is, didn't we talk about this, or somebody talked about this during Chaz before, or during the George Floyd protests and everything, that people are just LARPing protests and they're LARPing
fighting
the power?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. If you really look,
they want the TikTok clip, just to trigger you more. They want the TikTok clip of them being beaten by a policeman.
Right.
Even if they are the ones who hit the policeman on the head first, which is literally a viral clip that went viral this week.
Right. And that's why I opened the show with what I opened with. Like, it's always been that way, that college students, when they're learning to support their values and speak up for themselves, that they do these performative things. There's been a long-standing tradition of that in college. But here, if you are standing in the middle of the street, you are using force against other human beings. If you were setting up these zones, right, what was the picture you sent? What was the zone called?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Somebody said it's the worst Sonic level.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
If you're setting up these zones because you're occupying them, that is the pussy way of fighting a war. if you really want to overthrow these systems, if you want to have a revolution, actually do it. This idea of like, oh, it's nonviolent to occupy, to stay in the middle of the road. No, it is violent. It's just the weapons you're using are just your body. And your body is not going to stand up against the technology that exists. But these people have convinced themselves, they've tricked themselves into believing that they're being nonviolent, when being nonviolent merely just means pretending to fight a war rather than actually fighting the war.
Yeah. And how much of it really is nonviolent when you're preventing, people from doing the things that doing the things that they are supposed to be able to do, right? You know, the sit-ins in you know, let's compare this back to the '60s. The sit-ins in restaurants to protest the racial segregation in restaurants and other and then in public places as well. Those were protests, and we can kind of understand that they were breaking rules, soft rules, and in most cases, illegal, you know, rules that were immoral, right? Immoral rules. But what immoral rule are you breaking by setting up a camp inside of, like, the Google offices or the campus offices, right?
Right.
What immoral rule are you breaking?
Right.
That's the part I don't understand, right?
Right. Well, and that's where I'm saying it's LARPing war. The nonviolent protests are nonviolent in that they're, you know, the sit-ins are nonviolent in that they're not attacking another human being, but they're violent as in they're using force to occupy that until they change their rules. But there is a direct correlation here with these occupations that you're referring to. These are not a direct correlation. It's not, we're sitting on campus so you divest from specific companies. Those are connected. Those are, you have to fight a war and overthrow the company in order to take control of the company in order to divest. Do you see my point?
Yeah.
Fight the war if you want to fight the war. Fight what you're actually fighting.
I don't know about you, Justin, but it's such a flood right now, at least on X. Maybe it's the, you know, the... You know, I try to mix a lot between different political viewpoints on my Twitter feed. It seems like there's a lot of attention on this topic the last couple of weeks, like you said, amongst people from different parts of the political spectrum. Is this, how long do they let this last? And not to sound all conspiratorial here, but the election is coming. Are we still going to see Palestinian protests on campus? Are they going to let this happen? You know, people are going to go away for summer, right? Students are going to go away for summer. When they come back in the fall, is it just going to start up again? I can't imagine they're going to let this continue, right?
Well,
because it's not a winning
election
issue, right? It's not a winning election issue.
But the thing we'll have to see over the summer is how many of these people are actually college students. Because when things like this happen nowadays, there are the hangers-on that get involved. And they're the ones who propel this stuff forward. And that's why you end up with all these crimes and everything. I don't think a lot of these college students are going into this being like, oh, I'm going to rape someone. I think someone goes into this and has a proclivity for that who's not a college student, and they get involved. And that's why the crime sort of starts happening, because it's unregulated and there's no, and that sounds like I'm pro-government. No, I'm pro this usage of government, right? You need a police force. You need somebody overseeing, making sure these things aren't happening. When you don't have that, the people who want to get away with that stuff get into it. So I think we'll see over the summer, do these campuses allow these sort of sit-ins to continue under the guise of, oh, these are summer school people? I don't know.
Yeah, I can't wait for, I can't imagine a group like Antifa not taking advantage of this, by the way. We haven't seen a lot of people covering that aspect of the story. I'm sure Andy Ngo will be on top of it. He's already started doing some investigation. And yeah, so because, you know, the direct correlation here is between something like Charlottesville, right? That people should be connecting as well, right? We had all these claims that Nazis were going to, you know, with their tiki torches somehow take over the culture. And it didn't happen, right? But we've seen the left wing side of this have much more quote unquote political success, right?
Yeah, they project on to the other side what they are doing themselves.
Would have done. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Would have or are done. Or,
so everything
are
they said done. About Charlottesville, I think you're putting it more succinctly than I did. Everything that they accused would happen at Charlottesville is what I'm expecting to happen over the next 6 months.
Yeah. And I mean, they've already done it a little bit with, as we said, the Chaz stuff, the, you know, George Floyd protest, quote unquote, with all the riots and everything. They've shown over and over again they've done that. It's just how long has it continued to be allowed to go each time? I mean, I think I'm a bit more cynical than you is I think Antifa's already propelling this. I don't think this is college students propelling this. I think some college students probably were like, let's protest the genocide. And then this was Antifa or some group got a hold of it. And then
yeah, they already have the playbook.
Right.
Yep.
It became a national issue and they started replicating it across the country. I mean, there are some people who have accused George Soros of funding this. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest, I don't think it's like George Soros said, do this. I think it's probably more all these, you know, these things are just the incentives are just all aligned and it's
yes.
And it's things that he's funded that hold these ideas. So, of course, they're going to jump in on this stuff.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the George Soros as a puppet master and orchestrates all of these things. It's more what you said. He's put money into organizations and these organizations know when to act.
Community
and when not
organizers,
to act.
Right?
Yes.
This community needs to be organized.
Yes. All right. Well, that's all the farce there is to talk about this week. Let's finish up by talking about some art in The Hopeful Bromantic with JML. Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun. Wasn't focused on. As always, if you'd like to continue the conversation with us during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel. That is where I got the question from Midsider Edjo that I answered at the top of the show. All you do is go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode link, and in there you'll find the join code for our Discord. In the Discord, you can ask us questions, share your comments, watch the trailers. I usually put them in Saturdays before we record Trails for Terror Takedown, or just share some farce with us that you would like us to witness. For my review this week, William, I would like to talk about the movie Boy Kills World. Do you remember the trailer for this movie?
Boy Kills World, remind me.
This is the one where the guy is deaf. And so he invents the voice from Bob's Burgers as his internal monologue as he goes and tries to kill people.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is my one-sentence review of Boy Kills World. If Zack Snyder directed John Wick, it might look something like Boy Kills World, though with a bit more coherent of a theme. I need to edit there. My grammar was a little off, but I will fix that. I edited it as I spoke it. So here's my thing about this movie. There's a lot of Zack Snyder-isms in this movie. The way the action is sometimes directed is very Zack Snyder-esque. The ultimate, I think, point they're going for is Zack Snyder-esque, though it's not very clear. The bad guys in this movie, it's set in a totalitarian fascist state. So there's a lot here that I legitimately do not think this movie could have existed without Zack Snyder. However, at times, this seemed too surface level. Now, I know what this sounds like to the uninitiated, William. The uninitiated would be like, well, that's exactly what a Zack Snyder movie is. To me, this is the result of when you're constantly not allowing him to release his director's cut, and you only have the basic machinations of his movies, where everything's very surface level. In that sense, look, there are guns, there's violence, there's action, there's comedy. This is enjoyable to watch. Is it easy to keep straight? No. Does it always make sense? No. you're not going to have a bad time watching this movie, but you're just not going to be like, hey, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen. It's just, I got to the end of it and I said, that could have been better. I get what they were going for. I mean, really what they were going for is, in a totalitarian state, there is no good side, right? And the people who are stuck in between the two sides are the real victims, which sort of plays in our current society. Not saying that we're in a totalitarian state, but isn't that sort of what The Midsite is about? Isn't that sort of what a lot of Zack Snyder movies are about? I haven't seen Rebel Moon Part 2 yet because I'm only going to watch the director's cut. I decided after watching Part 1, but isn't that kind of what Part 1 seems to be about? I mean, both sides seems to be pretty corrupt in Part 1 of Rebel Moon. And I think that's what they were going for in Boy Kills World. It just, it could have been done better. So ultimately, I give it a solid bro rating. Is it an amazing movie? No. Is it a terrible movie? No. Is it enjoyable? Yes. Is it one of the better movies of the year? Yes. But again, William, we have yet to have any really good or great movies this year.
Yeah, it's been a slow year. And I think this is the delay due to COVID, right? Just the complete dearth. And I think it's also combined with the writer's strike and the aftermath of the writer's strike. I don't know how long it's going to take to recover.
Well, I don't know if we'll recover, but I do know what the next great movie is going to be. And we're definitely going to talk about that in Trailer Takedown because we do have a repeat trailer this week. But that, again, goes to the dearth that you're talking about. There's not even a lot of trailers coming out that are very interesting. So let's get into that. As always, you know, I always said when I post the trailers in Discord. I do that the Saturday before we record. That's so you can watch them when you want to, before the episode, after the episode, or maybe during the episode. You watch a trailer, we talk about it. You watch a trailer, we talk about it.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Summer Camp is about a bunch of old people who have a summer camp reunion when they're old. And when I say old, I mean, I guess at this point I should say elderly. Because, William, I think maybe we're old at this point. At what point are you old nowadays? What age are you old?
When you're irrelevant.
Okay, can you give me a real answer? Because I'm already irrelevant.
I don't know.
My podcast,
I think,
only
got old
90
is relative,
cents
but elderly.
Found.
Yeah, I think old is relative, but yeah, here we literally mean elderly.
Right. This is like if you took 80 for Brady and you were like, let's set it at a summer camp. 80 for Brady, right? It was pandering, but at least they had sort of a premise that kind of made sense. Whereas, like, this is the last hurrah for these people. Even then, I kind of was out on it. I only watched it because it was the Patriots. But here, William, I'm not elderly, and I can't think of many worse activities to do with my free time than to go to a summer camp reunion. It's just these people who are in charge now, these people who are making things. When I was growing up, people always used to say, like, oh, high school is the best time of your life, or college is the best time of your life. And I always found that sad because I was like, well, that's a very short time in my life, right? That's 4 years. Or if you take them together, that's 8 years. And I said, I don't want to always be living thinking the past was the best time. But I really think that's what people believe. Imagine living your entire life and thinking your summer camp was the thing you wanted to relive. That one summer. Or the 4 summers, so that's maybe 8 months, if summer camp's 2 months long. 8 months of your years, of your life, and you're living 80 years. That's sad. You know what's even sadder? Watching a movie about people who are living with that mentality. So you're not even living that mentality directly. You're a step back. You're sort of a voyeur in that mentality. Tackle.
Tackle!
Yes, this looks incredibly stupid. This could have... Can you imagine them actually doing this as a summer camp movie, like, with kids? And it would make more sense as a movie, right? The whole collecting their phones thing would make sense. All this stuff would make sense. Learning the lesson about being present, which is kind of presented in the trailer. But these are grown-ass adults. And
they're beyond grown-ass adults. They're elderly people.
Well, They're immature Arrested Development. This is exactly what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, but dude, if it was like John Cena, like in the Vacation Friends movie, and like Zac Efron, like maybe then it could have been funny. Because it's like, oh, look at these middle-aged people who don't get it yet, and they're still acting like teenagers. But elderly people?
Yeah. And the whole idea of camp counselors telling them what to do, Justin, if they were trying to do this to make it absurd, I don't think it worked. So,
no. Well, because the directing style isn't absurd enough.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Tackle.
Tackle. Second trailer.
Blink Twice stars Channing Tatum, and it's like if you crossed Magic Mike with a fictionalized version of Jared Leto's cult. So this waitress connects with Channing Tatum, who's this rich tech guy, and he brings her to his island, and weird stuff starts happening. At least that's what we're told. You're going to have to check me on this, William. I feel like when I watched this trailer, they told me there was weird stuff going on, and they were like, wait, this doesn't make sense. But they didn't really show a lot of weird stuff going on. I was kind of like, they're just hanging out on an island, and you're just freaked out. And I don't know why. And maybe it's because they're trying not to reveal everything in the trailer, but that's what I'm saying about the Magic Mike part of it. You think Magic Mike would be like an over-the-top sort of romanticized movie? For some reason, Magic Mike is very naturalistic and understated, and it seems to be that way with this movie as well. So I don't understand this movie at all. This feels like it's like wannabe Oscar bait. Tackle.
Tackle.
I like the premise, Justin. I just think it misses on the execution.
Yeah, the premise isn't the issue at all.
The premise seems interesting, but I think it's completely hampered by the director. I think that's really what it comes down to. And what a waste of some talent as well, because it looks like the acting is good, but it's wrong. Does that make sense? Like, they were asked to do something that looks like they're doing it, but like, I don't think it's going to work for this kind of story. What a waste of an interesting premise. Tackle.
Third trailer.
Ride is a movie about a bull rider, and there's a kid who has cancer, and there's a retired bull rider. This is kind of like if you made Cars live action and set it in bull riding and then made it naturalistic. If you ever wondered what was going to happen when naturalism got crossed with conservative Christianity, it's this movie. And I don't know if you can make a worse description of a movie for me to want to see it. Like, that sounds absolutely terrible, right? It's this idea that life is suffering and no matter what you do, you're going to suffer, right? And that's what they're trying to do with the bull riding, right? They're saying like, you know, even if you last all 8 seconds on the bull, you still get thrown off. And it's not the ride that makes the bull rider. It's what they do when they get thrown off that makes them. And I get it, right? The whole idea of it's, you know, it's not what you do when you win. It's what you do when you lose that matters. But it's taking all of these tropes and it's couching them in naturalism, both writing-wise and directorially. Tackle.
Yeah, this is a bad country music song. That's all this is, isn't it? That's all this is. Tackle.
Final trailer.
Deadpool and Wolverine is the second trailer for this movie we've talked about. I added it on here because there's a lack of good trailers. And also, this trailer shows a lot...
You wanted to avoid the rule. That's what's happening here.
Oh, 100%.
100%.
There we go. Okay. Yes, because I like. Do you want me to pick Summer Camp, Blink Twice, or Ride, or some other crappy trailer that's out there?
Yeah.
But I'm including it for another reason. One, it includes Wolverine. The first trailer didn't really include Wolverine. Two, I think this is going to be the first great movie of the year. I have been very clear from the beginning that I'm a big Ryan Reynolds fan. Right, I loved Free Guy, one of his last great movies that came out. I also was clear that I think Deadpool is the role that he was born to play. I think Deadpool works because of his involvement in it. I think he's perfect for it. I think it's like Robert Downey Jr. with Iron Man. And also, could you argue it's like Hugh Jackman and Wolverine? So then if you put the two of them together, it's going to be hard to mess up. Two people who they're associated iconically with their character. I mean, do we want Deadpool and Wolverine and Iron Man next to add Robert Downey Jr. to this? I'm being a bit facetious, but I don't know how this movie can be a failure. It might be a financial failure. I have no idea. But from an enjoyment standpoint and from being a well-executed movie standpoint, I don't know how it can fail. And this trailer didn't do anything to dissuade me. To me, it's getting a little too close to it's revealing too much of the plot for my sake. I kind of want to leave a lot of these gags unseen. So I don't think I'm going to watch another trailer for this movie. But yes, William, hug.
Hug.
I too agree that this is a great trailer. Maybe revealing a little too much, but we'll see. I'm sure there's a lot more gags. Ryan Reynolds is great. Hugh is great as well. Hugo Jack. As Wolverine. The only thing I would say is you're wondering how it can go wrong. And Justin, we already know the answer to that. Need I bring up Gambit to you? We already know how they would screw this stuff up. Or Iron Man.
So, did you have to re-traumatize me?
Yes.
I still have not watched X-Men 97. I didn't. I stopped. You think I'm kidding? I have not watched it.
Yeah.
Did they bring him back yet?
Nope. So, yeah, I think we know how they screw this up. The question is, are they going to? So, we'll see. But, like you, this doesn't dissuade me from seeing the movie. I'm still as excited to see the movie as I was before.
Hug!
All right, William, what did we learn this trip?
I learned that I need to re-traumatize you daily until you're desensitized to this trauma. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I learned that I need to stop talking to you because I am never going to be desensitized to this drama. Look, dude, out of all the superheroes, why have we never had anything Gambit? Is he that anti-woke? Is he that anti-social justice? Is he that conventionally American? Is that what this is?
What is the answer? From the bayou.
What's the answer then? Why have we never had a good Gambit movie?
I don't know.
It's bizarre, right? All right, that brings us to the end of this episode. I want to thank everyone for listening. If it wasn't for you, this would just be me talking in the corner of my closet like a crazy person. It still is that, especially when William gets me yelling about Gambit. I don't know why he does that. It's one of those things where I'm like, don't get me started. Then I get started, then I don't stop. If you want to support the show, you can do so by going to midside.com/store, picking up some merch. Maybe I need to make some, like, Gambit merch or something. Like, don't kill Gambit. I don't know. I've also been thinking about, like, I feel like there needs to be more good straight edge stuff. So I'm still thinking about that, but I don't have time. Who am I kidding? TheMidside.com/TheCut. Pick up my novel. You can go to TheMidside.com/Patreon, TheMidside.com/Locals. That's how we keep the lights on. You can also give us sats or satoshis on Fountain. I don't know what that means. It feels like I'm asking for you to give me a Japanese person. That feels racist, but I guess that's what I have to ask for. Or the best way to grow the show is to tell a female friend. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelznesky reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
And then, by the way, and in the end, I did it. I did that.
I've been thinking about the barometer of knowing when we're past peak woke. It'll be when we no longer use this drop daily on the or weekly on the show.
As Commander in Chief, I was proud to have ended the ban on transgender Americans.
That'll be the metric, Justin.
I don't know. I kind of always want to use that. I like that one. The fact that he called them that by accident is hilarious.